Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Friday.
Yay.
thank you, Lord. It is Friday. It is the 31st of August.
Whoa.
Yeah. It is my brother Patrick, my second oldest brother. I'm the youngest. He turned 60 years old today. So happy birthday, Pat. Mm. I know he's listening. I wish him a very happy birthday. Now I don't have to get him a card. Let me introduce our panel to you. Hey, Chris Churchill is here. We always love when Chris is here. He's a columnist for the Times Union newspaper, and he joins us this morning. Chris, good morning. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Judith Eng joins us as well, as she does every Friday, and she is a former EPA regional administrator. Judith, good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thanks. I just want to point out, summer's not over. The best part of summer are the weeks in September.
That's a very good point.
In my view. Yes.
That's why we always say the unofficial end of summer.
So but put those pumpkin spice things away.
Yeah, we're not ready for that nonsense yet.
Get that out of here.
I think Starbucks already has the pumpkin spice latte.
Oh, no, they're going to be all
like
over the place.
It's like scented candles. I just hate that smell.
Yeah.
Well, it's fake. And Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Up late last night, practicing with the Berkshire Ramblers for our big appearance at the Guthrie Center when we all get together, and all you WAMCers and everybody else who like the old folk music, this is a great time to come, and we'd love to see you there. It's 7 o'clock on Sunday, 1955.
And we'll give that number out again, but it's Sunday, 7 o'clock at the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
And I hope to see you all there.
Oh, you know who I saw yesterday? Your neighbor, Jane Atkinson.
No kidding.
Jane is starring as Ann Richards in the show Ann.
Oh, is
the
that
one woman show?
Is that right?
And she's doing it over at Dorset Theater Festival, which I believe is sold out. But if you can't get tickets for that, she's going to be doing it at Shakespeare and Company.
Oh, okay.
In the fall.
Oh,
and
great.
It is marvelous. She is just stunning.
Remind everybody what she does on television.
Well, she was in 24. She was in House of Cards. She was in Madam Secretary. She usually plays the Secretary of State or somebody, a force to be reckoned with. Yeah. Amazing actress.
And does she play
Ann? She plays Ann Richards.
That Helen Taylor usually plays?
Right. So Helen Taylor wrote the play, and it's one of the, I think it's the first time that someone other than Holland has done it, but she worked with Holland on the role.
And I have to say that she is a wonderful neighbor.
Oh, well, she was asking about you, and she was just so sweet. But Kristen Van Genhoven from Wham Theater directed. Dina Janos at Dorset was there, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful night. Kelly and I had a blast.
It's an inspiring play. It's the life of Ann Richards, the former Texas governor, and I saw it at Lincoln Center a few years ago, and I think it's one of the best plays I've ever seen in New York City. It was amazing.
The other thing, too, is how relevant it is. I mean, it was written during the Obama administration. It has mostly to do with during the Clinton administration. But this entire second act talking about the need for women to get involved in politics and the need to vote and the importance of your vote, you know.
And you know something, Joe? Not to shanghai this as usual. But I want you to know that the latest spate of polls, I'm sure you've been looking at them, Chris Churchill, have shown this huge divergence between men and women and who they are for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll talk about that, especially in the Delgado in the Delgado Faso poll that came out last night from Siena. But
And also the Tenney poll, same thing.
Tenney poll, and I think we're seeing this nationally as well. But it was a really cool, it was just so relevant to hear it. And so if you get a chance.
And it's funny.
It's hilariously
it's
funny.
Well,
Ann Richards was funny.
Yeah. Oh, well, Ann Richards is
all her original lines are amazing.
Terrific mouth.
The little potty mouth. And that comes out, too. And Jane is the perfect. Oh, God, she's just great. So anyway,
she
if you get a chance
anything.
To see that, I agreed.
Do you, are you aware, Joe, that there was a WAPO poll out this morning, actually last night, on how Trump is doing? And his numbers are going down significantly.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about this. This whole idea. We'll start with something else. But this whole idea of Throwback Thursday as they are memorializing John McCain is just, I mean, it's not unbelievable, but it's unbelievable.
Tell everybody what Throwback Thursday is.
The president spent a lot of time tweeting yesterday, and what he was tweeting during the memorial service, before, during, and after. After was more of the was of a rally that he held in Indiana, but during was just showing these clips from Fox News from election night 2016 of him winning and sort of the shockwave, and he kept on calling it Throwback Thursday. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
How disrespectful. I mean, he watches cable TV all the time, and the McCain funeral was live on
everything.
Yeah. Certainly aware that it's happening.
Yeah. There were people in the White House yesterday who said every television was on the funeral.
They
were all over the place.
How low can you go?
I do have to say that. So let's talk about the funeral first, memorial. The funeral is tomorrow at the National Cathedral in Washington. The body of Senator McCain is now lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda, and it was flown from Arizona last night to Washington, and that was after a beautiful memorial service in which a wide range of speakers, friends of Senator McCain, spoke, including Joe Biden, including an Arizona Cardinals player, including two people, a former chief of staff, and just a friend that he met along the way. And it was a really beautiful remembrance. But oh my, and you can tell that this was from what we have heard, Senator McCain had a lot to do with the planning of his own memorial and funeral. And every speaker certainly put in the cause of bipartisanship and of treating people equally and fairly. And it seemed to be, and maybe you're just reading into it, I was reading into it, but it seemed to be a very direct shot to the one guy who wasn't invited to the funeral.
Yeah, it did seem that way. And it does seem sometimes like you do have to be careful not to read into everything. You know,
because
somebody can say something nice about John McCain and not have it be a direct, shot at the president.
But don't you think?
But there were a lot of, when Biden said, he could not stand the abuse of power and things like that.
And it seemed to be so unified that they were all saying much the same thing in their own way, that it seemed like this was, oh, by the way, I would like you to do my eulogy. Here are some talking points.
I think the few days, while solemn and respectful and important, are produced like a political event. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think he probably had his staff.
Not for a politician, right?
He had his staff and his family think through talking points, messages. It was extraordinary. And I think it also, is touching a nerve, because so many Americans, whatever you think about John McCain, whatever you think about President Trump, are just tired of the fighting and the drama and want a little bit of unity. And, McCain himself, he was a contradiction in many ways. I mean, I had tremendous respect for him and disagreed on so many things, like the Iraq War. His selection of Sarah Palin for vice president kind of opened up the door.
Also not invited, by the way.
Yeah, bring unqualified people to run for high office. But I think he served the nation so admirably and deserves all of our respect. And then the sideshow of the president tweeting his greatest hits during the funeral. I mean, how low can you go?
Yeah, this definitely revealed the petty side of Trump. I mean, we all know it's there, and, this is particularly bad.
He should have gone golfing yesterday and just kind of left this to the McCain family and the nation to grieve appropriately. He should not. He just should have been silent yesterday.
Well, let me take the tack that I think a good deal of what is happening here on the honoring of John McCain, for very good reasons, is also because people just can't get over Trump and what he's doing. That's what I think is really so you can't dismiss the anti-Trump part of this whole mixture. You just can't.
And I wonder what veterans, you know, honored veterans think of this treatment. The few interviews I've seen are they're mighty unhappy.
Well, don't you
with
think we
disrespect.
Saw this with the American Legion and
yeah,
writing
I was
to them?
Say, mm-hmm. Yeah, Pence was sent out to, you know, smooth their ruffled feathers there because they were upset about the flag lowering.
Remember, that was just Monday.
Like, I know.
A political fight about whether or not the flag should be raised or not.
And yesterday on Bloomberg, he said he didn't botch it. So, a quick programming note that at 10 a.m. tomorrow is the funeral from National Cathedral in Washington. Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama will be eulogizing John McCain, and we'll be airing that live as it happens on tomorrow morning.
You can only imagine the president's tweets tomorrow. I mean, this is just getting started. This is a 3-day memorial service, essentially, and yikes, I'm a little afraid of what's coming.
And especially with that Washington Post poll that I had just referenced, which we're going to talk about later. But it's extraordinary. This guy's is really hitting the skids right now. And we know that when he hits the skids, he gets even nastier, if that's possible.
And I think he's very concerned about the book coming out on September 11th by Woodward.
Right.
Bob Woodward apparently has a blockbuster book coming where he did it the old-fashioned way. But, you know, we all are rewatching All the President's Men. Is that the
yeah,
word?
Yeah.
I've watched it over and over again.
Too,
like
the
phone books and the rotary phones.
They're in a big, big hurry, and then they have to go to the rotary phone and it takes forever for them to actually make a phone call.
Well, apparently, with a little bit more technology, he's used his same investigatory tools to interview scores of Trump former and current staffers. And I think the president is rightly worried about what's in that book.
Because, go ahead, Al.
I was just going to say, I was on doing my hour of exercise between 8 and 9 walking around Washington Park this morning. And this wonderful guy, Paul Rosenberg, I don't know if you know him, came up beside me, and I was going much slower than he was. And he said, you know, I love you guys, but the truth of the matter is, it's just too much Trump. I'm all Trumped out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to listen about Trump anymore. Well, so no matter what he does, another book.
Takes the air out of the room.
That's exactly right. But that seems to be what he wants to do. I mean, this could have been a week where there would have been a little bit less Trump, but of course he had to insert himself
right into the discussion. Right? It's the normalization of his incredible...
I mean, this is his skill, really, is just to dominate. I mean, this is how he won the Republican primary, right?
Sure.
He just sucked up none of the other candidates could get a word in edgewise. And when they, you know, when they were interviewed, all the questions were about Trump.
It's working. See, that's the thing.
It's not working. I mean, he got elected, obviously, but he also, you know, you referenced those low poll numbers.
We'll talk about them right now. So the poll was released.
Do you want to talk about the poll, Ellen?
I do.
We'll talk about it later sometime.
How did we know?
Yeah. Later is now. So 60% of those polled in a new survey disapprove of President Trump. A new high for the president in joint polling conducted by the Washington Post and ABC News. He has never had a disapproval rating that high since his time in office. This was he is down ultimately 4 points from April, I believe I read. Yes, April. His approval rating is 36%.
That's great, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But then in addition to that...
Not for him, but yes. It's...
In addition to that, you have all the questions that they asked about should Mueller be fired.
Right.
And even his base says no.
Right.
Or huge numbers say no on that.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller saw similar positive numbers. 63% of those polled say they support Mueller's investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Only 29% said that they oppose it, according to this poll. Also, in the Jeff Sessions matter, a majority of Americans are siding with Jeff Sessions. 62% say they are on his side. A slightly larger portion of Americans, 64%, said Trump should not fire Sessions. And a similar portion of survey respondents, 61%, believe it would be a crime if Trump directed Cohen to make hush money payments to two women who say they had affairs with Trump during the 2016 election. Cohen pleaded guilty to making payments of that nature, voting campaign finance laws, at the direction of a candidate for federal office. Donald Trump. When it comes to the economy, Americans were more favorable in their evaluations of the president. 45% of those polled said they approve of his handling of the economy. 47% disapprove, so still a majority disapproving. And the poll was conducted over the last week, August 26th through the 29th.
But that last thing, Joe, is incredible because the economy is hot, hot, hot. And, you know, we're at full employment and all the rest. And yet a majority by 1 point or plurality, I guess, by 1 point suggests that they're not happy with his handling of the economy. That's extraordinary.
I mean, yeah, to be fair, that's just one poll. But on the other hand, the Real Clear Politics average is also showing kind of a downward, you know, downward right. dip in the graph.
Is so that it's a not, summation of all of the polls?
It's a summation yes. of all the polls, yeah. right? And it has him generally, I think, at 42.8% approval and 54% disapproval.
Yeah, and there's a catch-up time on all of that. So, in other words, some of the polls that they're putting in, right, Chris, are...
It's through that Washington Post poll you were just... it includes that one, Rasmussen, The Economist.
But it also...
Yeah, but some of those are a little bit... I think what Alan's point is that some of them are a little bit later.
Earlier. Actually, no, they are all taken at about the same time, 8:26 to 8:29.
And it does take a little time for, like, the Cohen news and the Manafort trial to sink in. And there's a delay on the second Manafort trial, which is going to bring it closer to the midterm elections. It's just a week or two delay. Manafort, of course, is trying to get the trial out of Washington, D.C. But I think his inevitable conviction a second time will remind midterm voters, you know, the company you keep.
And maybe a third time, too, if they decide to go
right.
back for those other 10
yes,
counts,
they do,
where
they
there's
delayed.
Only one juror yeah. saying no. And then also, I know we're going to be talking about the John Faso poll, mm-hmm. In which he is leading by 5 points. That's a lot, by the way. Not unsurprising in a Republican-leaning district in the past, but that's a lot, 5 points.
And margin of error,
yeah,
too, there.
I don't think it's that much. I mean, we know...
All right, let's just hold because we mm-hmm. have to take a quick
exciting.
Break.
Exciting. It's very exciting.
We'll be right back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, as always, and just a lovely moment to have all of you together. So if you want to write us a letter, we welcome you to do so, panel@wamc.org. We were just teasing before we went to the break about the poll that came out last night, and this is close to home. It certainly doesn't cover all of the coverage area that we have, far from it. However, it is interesting, and I think even if you are in the outskirts of this congressional district, you will find it interesting because so many from the outskirts who have safe races are working in this particular race.
I know they're coming over from Massachusetts. They're
and,
telling me all the time.
And even here in Albany with in Paul Tonko's district. So freshman Republican Representative John Faso holds a 5-point lead over his Democratic opponent, Anthony Delgado, 45-40%, according to a new Spectrum News Siena College poll of likely 19th congressional district voters released today. Faso has a negative 37-38% favorability rating compared to 34-22% favorability rating for Delgado. There is... I just want to find the margin of error here.
It was 4.8%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is kind of big,
of
but yeah.
Yes.
Still, would you rather be winning by 5% or losing by 5%?
No, I was surprised it was 5%. I would have thought like maybe 2-3%.
Well, that's what happened in the Tenney race. Again, you know, up there in that Utica district, that's the Democrats leading by 2 points.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if you're looking for good news for Faso in this poll, it's that 14% of Republican voters are undecided, which would you would expect that, you know, when it comes time to make a decision, they would fall Faso's way, and that would kind of boost his numbers a little bit.
So what did you say good news, if you're looking for good news?
Well, because if he has to win over Republicans, yes. that should be a pretty easy task for him, right? If he had to win over Democrats or independents, that's a more difficult task.
Yeah, I think we should remember this is a very conservative district.
You think so?
45% approve of
and
Trump.
And it's an upstate district.
45% approve of Trump and 47% disapprove of Trump in this district.
May I just interject real quick, just to do our due diligence? But yesterday you announced your endorsement of Anthony Delgado,
yes.
And I just want to make that
yes,
clear.
I was going to get to that.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I apologize. I'm
incredibly surprised.
I know the
shocking.
The campaign put it out, and before we got the letters, I just wanted to make it known.
Yeah, I enthusiastically supported Antonio Delgado yesterday, primarily because he is much stronger on the environment than John Faso is. You think of Faso as maybe a moderate Republican. He's not on environmental issues. He has a 34% environmental voting record and is on the wrong side of drinking water issues, climate change issues. So I didn't endorse in the primary because I thought the candidates were quite similar on environmental issues. But here, this is a district that has a long nonpartisan interest in environmental protection issues, and John Faso is so out of the mainstream. But it's a conservative district. It goes way, you know, when Hinchey had part of that district, it went way out to Binghamton and then to northern Rensselaer County, including Hoosick Falls, by the way. But I think Delgado being within 5 points is fine because I think candidates run as the underdogs. He definitely is the underdog. Faso's going to have a lot of money, including from the Mercer family.
And they're playing those ads all the time. Some people have described them as racist.
I would.
Well, you would. But there's some people who think, you know, this continual reference to the hip hop and the rest of it is unjustified and unfair and racist. It's dog whistle kind of thing. You know, maybe. But you work with what you can, and in that district, that stuff seems to work.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the thing with polls, especially at this time in our politics, is that the Siena poll is a good poll, but they have a lot of trouble capturing energy. They have a lot of trouble capturing.
Right.
I mean, it's a poll of likely voters, but it's still impossible to know who's going to show up.
That's where polls have trouble.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I said that 14% undecided among Republicans was good for Faso, but it could also be kind of a hint of, they're unenthusiastic
and
therefore won't show up,
and
which would obviously be bad for him.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah,
but then let's match the Trump polling, which is going down, with Faso. That can't be good. Because as Judith just pointed out, you know, when you take a look at how much support Trump has gotten from Faso, that can be hurtful to him. And I don't agree that the fact that this massive number of Republicans is undecided is good for Faso. I think it's bad for Faso.
You might
so
be right.
To that point, just a couple of facts from this poll or a couple things from this poll. This all from Steve Greenberg from the Siena poll. Just as voters prefer Faso by 5 points, by a 5-point margin, they also want to see Republicans control the House. And by a slim 2-point margin, voters disapprove of the job Donald Trump is doing as president, to your point, Alan.
And also look at the breakdown between women and men. That's fascinating.
It is fascinating. So in men for Faso by 21 points, women for Delgado by 9 points. Mm. And also to Judith's point also about the weirdness of this area. So Delgado leads in Ulster and Dutchess.
Surprise.
And Faso leads in the other 9 counties.
I predict women will be very influential in the outcome of this election. And many women, not all.
Lisa Strada? Lisa Strada.
Many women, not all, are really upset that Faso has a bad environmental voting record, was silent on separating children at the border until lots and lots of calls came into his office. And, you know, he's not a Rockefeller Republican. Faso is more of a Trump Republican. He's in the majority party. He could stand up to Trump a whole lot more. And I think there's no question Delgado's the underdog, but I think he's got a much more energetic base of support, which will result in higher turnout, particularly among women voters.
Chris mentioned the money that's being spent. I think it was you that spent the money that'll be spent in this campaign, and certainly Faso does have more, although from the outside interests, I mean, this is one of the key races in the country. There's going to be a lot of money spent on both sides.
Yeah, we're going to be so tired of, you know, turn off your TVs for a while.
Because, you know what? It's so funny. I was thinking about this last night that I haven't, because I was reading about some of the ads. Mm-hmm. I never see the ads because I don't watch traditional television anymore. You know, with streaming and so forth, I don't even see the ads. And the only way I see them is online and or through social media, and that's interesting, too.
It's interesting that you said that, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and they've been playing during the podcast or ahead of the podcast.
So let's remember that these guys, that you win or lose an election, a blowout is more than 5 points, right? Mm-hmm. That's considered a landslide in politics. So while, Joe, you're an advanced guard on using the right kind of new electronic media, whereas somebody like me tends to watch, you know, Gunsmoke and other things, and watch and watch the ads.
You'll certainly see them. Where I see them is on cable news, obviously, and I watch a lot of cable news, and that's certainly where they are. But you know, how much money is Faso going to be spending on ads on CNN?
Well, it's not just Faso; it's all the outside independent expenditures, and I think that's the one that's running the really questionable ad about
the rap lyrics.
Music. Yeah. I don't think that's the Faso campaign. Yeah. I think that's an outside expenditure.
No, it's the RCCC.
Right. Yeah. That's not him directly. But I also think that ad really energizes Delgado supporters. It is an offensive, ridiculous ad, considering the issues of the day that we want our members of Congress to address, issues like drinking water and world peace and climate change. And the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee is running a racist anti-music ad.
Yeah, but they may use some of those lyrics to try to tamp down that female vote that you were talking about earlier, because you know there are some lyrics there that are borderline misogynistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but I don't think it's going to work. I think we have a well-informed voter base. But where that ad will work is pulling out people who have racist tendencies, and sadly that exists not only in this district but many across the country.
It is a district though that went strongly for Obama, so it's not as though it's, you know, just, you know, some sort of redneck district in Mississippi or something that's just that racist appeals are going to automatically work. I mean, it is.
But
yeah, go ahead.
Racism is everywhere, though.
No, I know, yeah. I know.
But the real question here is what the direction of the Delgado ads is going to be. Seems to me that the way that they should be going and what they should be saying, far be it from me to tell them what to do, is that if you want Trump out of here, and even if you like John Faso, you can't vote for him because that's a vote against impeachment. You want him impeached. You want him held responsible. Then that's why you have to vote for Delgado.
Yeah, but I don't think Delgado's going to say the I word.
They all got the memo.
Because that will energize that 14% right into the polling booth.
They all got the memo.
But remember what I said in the beginning of this discussion. In this congressional district, 45% of voters approve of Trump. 47% disapprove.
So but who comes out is the question.
True. But I think Delgado's best shot here is pointing out the very significant policy differences between the two candidates.
See, I don't agree. Okay. I think the main thing here is that Trump is despised by so many people now. And if you take these poll results from Trump and you overlay it on the Faso campaign or in any other campaign, that has to be effective. And every political pundit that I've been watching has been talking about the fact that he is so despised.
I disagree with you too. I think it's a mistake. I think Democrats make a mistake when they make every election about Trump. That didn't work for Hillary. I think you have to have kind of a positive message about what you're going to do that's different.
Right. Well, don't you think
if you just make it all about we're going to fight Trump, we're going to stop Trump? I just think that
so we don't agree. That's okay.
But that is what
I seldom agree with you.
But to Alan's point, that's what Cuomo's doing now.
Well, because he's in a primary.
Right, he's in a Democratic primary,
It's the Cynthia effect. Andrew Cuomo was not that vocal against Donald Trump and his policies.
And he may tamp it down a little bit when you're talking about the general election as opposed to...
This is a very temporary narrative.
Maybe. But Ocasio-Cortez, right? She won because she was to the left, of the party. Don't we agree?
Because that was Crowley phoned it in.
Right, and that was
He made mistakes. Right. There's no question about it. But what's interesting about her candidacy is that she brought a lot of young people in. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, are there a lot of young people to be brought in here?
Yes.
There are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of colleges in this district, and a lot of students register where they go to school. And I wouldn't minimize Delgado's victory in the Democratic primary. I mean, that was a crowded field. And I think he won because he had a good message and he had a really good field operation.
He also had the most money among the candidates.
Among the candidates, So, I think he'll be competitive, but no question he's an underdog. That's not if he's down by 30 points, people start to not take you that seriously.
Right.
But down by 5, he's, it's within the margin of error.
Well, it's
and
10
he's
weeks.
Work hard.
10 weeks and the official, the real start of the campaign kickoff is the coming week.
Yeah. So I was interested in the headline in the Albany Times Union this morning, your paper, Chris, which said something like narrow. We used the word narrow in the headline.
Well, I think that's because of the margin of error, right? I mean, if you have a race that's almost within the margin of error, it's essentially tied if you think about the margin of error. That is a narrow race.
Well, yes, but if you saw Delgado leading by 5 percentage points, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether you would have seen the word narrow.
Are you accusing us of liberal bias?
Who, me? With my friend Rex?
Yeah.
Or with my friend Chris? No.
Okay. All right.
The good thing is I think soon we will see Delgado ahead by 5 points, and we'll see what the Times Union headline says. Next poll.
Nicely done, Judith, as always. All right, Alan has a fistful of letters. We will get to those right after this short break. All right, as promised, we have letters. Let's get to those as we finish up our first hour here.
Okay. Heather says, I am one of the independents that Alan frequently describes. Living in New Hampshire, I have met more candidates than I can count and consider myself to be a highly informed voter. I used to split my vote so much between both parties that I thought my ballot would tear in half. I have completely changed my plan for voting since the 2016 election. As a female science teacher, I cannot imagine voting for any candidate who stands behind a racist, hateful, lying misogynist that I would not even allow in my classroom. Thanks for all you do. Heather from New Hampshire. H from H.
Yay, female science teachers.
Okay.
They will rule the day.
Diane. My request is that every morning at the beginning of your roundtable, someone would announce the number of children still separated from their families.
495.
497, according to this. Let's get it right here. Are still separated from their parents. This figure includes 22 children under the age of 5, still in government care. 6 of those are 4 years old or younger, whose parents were deported without them. Okay, thank you to Diane. All right. And then Anthony says, very scary. I watched Trump's speech in Indiana last night. Very scary. He's hitting his stride with his populist rhetoric. Hitler would have been proud. A society that loves entertainment. Trump's got his base eating out of his hand. Anthony from wherever. And we heard from Michael. I just heard Alan praise the economic numbers. Remember, 2 years ago, these statistics were dismissed as rigged by the Republican presidential candidates. Don't you think the prevaricator-in-chief could do a little rigging of his own? And that's from Michael. And then Teresa says, Delgado, once again, the establishment Dems shoot themselves in the foot. They chose to support the least progressive in a great field of candidates. Delgado was inevitably going to be a target of racist innuendo from the right, while simultaneously not energizing the progressives. And that's from Teresa.
They also chose the candidate, once again, with kind of the weakest ties to the district. You know, I mean, they've done this again and again. They choose people who move up from New York City essentially to run for Congress.
Well, he's Schenectady, right? And his wife's Woodstock in the district.
Yeah, but he moved. I think he moved to the district and then almost immediately started running for Congress.
Yeah, but he does. I mean, as Alan says, I mean, he does have Capital District roots. It's kind of the same media market, Schenectady and the 19th Congressional District. I mean, John Faso grew up in Long Island. I mean,
he did. And he did the same thing when he ran for the assembly, I think, you know, after moving to Kinderhook. He hadn't been there very long. But Delgado is. To speak to what the writer was saying, he is a Manhattan hedge fund guy. He's not necessarily
a lawyer, not hedge fund.
Well, he worked for that. Yeah, you're
Aiken
right.
Aiken Gump,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Which a big law firm,
big
yeah.
lobbying firm
yeah.
too. Yeah. With ties to hedge fund.
But I would disagree. But I this could go on for hours. But I would disagree.
Yeah.
I think Delgado is progressive.
Well, he is.
He may be, but Aiken Gump is not, and he's been doing their bidding for a few years.
Well, you know,
Gotta pay that law school tuition off.
You're right, Judith. This is a very tough one. We see my favorite ex-governor of Massachusetts now running for the possibility of running for the presidency. Where's he been working? He's been working for, you know.
Coca-Cola, right?
No. He's been working for, what's his name?
Bain County.
Yeah, Bain.
Oh, yeah. And before he was governor, he was the general counsel at Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Well, I think Americans—
the bottle bill. That's my issue.
I like it. I think a guy who can prove to the American people that he has the values that they do, you know, that he can make money but still be progressive, is an attractive candidate. Don't you think? No. All right, and then Larry in the Berkshire says, is anyone now part of the resistance, like Tahira Amatul Wadud, automatically acceptable because of their anti-right agenda? Should we overlook her connections to anti-Semites and anti-American clerics? Would we similarly normalize a right-wing bigot who holds some popular political view? I think not. That's Larry in the Berkshires. And, of course, he's talking about the Richie Neal seat in which his opponent is running against him. And this is a screed about her. I don't know whether those things he said are true. I just don't know.
Just because moments ago when Sarah brought in the latest batch of letters, she pointed to the sheet where I have the rules. So keep your email short, to the point. One per customer, and just proofread them before you send them so we know what you're saying.
And Ed said, Trump wants the spotlight, you think? Trump is jealous of the attention that is being given to the senator. And
yes.
That's from Ed.
Sadly true.
And Paul from Albany says, with all due respect to the office of the presidency, I agree too much Trump. If a tree falls in the wood, does it not make a noise if the media is not there to report it? Keep up the great work. What do you mean, keep up the great work? You're telling us it's too much Trump. Look, the guy's the president of the United States. Every time he opens his mouth, it has serious implications as to whether or not newspapers are going to be put out of business because newsprint is going to be tariffed or something of that kind. You've got to cover the president. He's enormous power.
And you saw the FBI arrested a man yesterday for making violent threats toward the Boston Globe newsroom. And I think that is directly linked to the president's enemy of the people. Comments. In fact, the guy who was arrested said he was doing it in direction of the narrative put forth by President Trump.
And I think the fact that the Trump polls are going down has to indicate that somebody is listening, somebody is watching, somebody is making some sense out of what's going on around here.
And that's before the Mueller report or indictments come out. I mean, it's pretty early in terms of what we don't know the outcome of the Mueller investigation for the president personally and his family. We certainly know the outcome for Manafort and Cohen and General Flynn and others.
Right.
But imagine, what are the polls going to say if his investigation reveals wrongdoing, as most people anticipate it probably will, or else it would not have been going on for this long?
I don't know. I'd love to know what Chris thinks about this. What if?
What does Chris think?
I keep thinking of what Chris is thinking about what Mueller is thinking.
Oh, yeah, that's getting a little meta for me.
In other words,
it's too early in the morning.
That should be a column.
In other words, it might be really interesting to sort of try to get inside Mueller's head to see what his instincts are here.
I think it's dangerous to try to get inside anybody's head. I mean, who knows? Who knows what he's thinking? But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, the Times did have a big article last weekend about Mueller's past and that he actually, is fairly traditional in terms of following precedent, and he's a straight shooter, and don't expect anything out of the ordinary from him in terms of how these investigations usually operate.
Well, yes, but how these investigations usually operate is you get a target. And there is no question who the target is here.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Manafort is on, and the ones that I'm watching are people like the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, because when he makes an utterance which goes against Trump, I think that has tremendous import to the way this is all going, because he's the firewall.
All right, we're going to hold. I'm going to hold there, and then we'll go to news, and we'll be right back after this. Natalie McMaster and Donna Leahy are playing a concert entitled Visions from Cape Breton and Beyond at the Egg in Albany, New York tonight at 7:30. That's the music we've been listening to, and you can find out more at theegg.org. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here. Judith Enck and Chris Churchill making up the panel. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. Alan has a couple more to get to, and we will then move on to other topics.
Okay, Joe. Thank you. David says, I object to the way the term landslide is being devalued in modern day politics, as in Alan referring to a 5-point election win as a landslide. Landslide probably means an overwhelming victory. 5 points is certainly a very convincing win these days, but it's hardly overwhelming, and that's David from Queensbury. Well, here I just want to put on my political science hat and tell you that this isn't me talking. This is the way in which my profession has regarded a five point win is generally regarded, and I don't like it any more than you do, David, but it's generally regarded as a landslide. I don't make the rules. I just quote them. And then Daniel says, Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg equals progressive and wealthy. And that's Daniel in Highland.
Did we mention? I don't remember mentioning him.
I think
him.
It was, he's confusing that with Bloomberg Media.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which he does own, but it's not technically Michael Bloomberg.
And here's a really nice letter about Chris. Chris makes things interesting.
Good.
That's why we keep inviting him back.
That's what I try to do.
It gets even better. The first sentence is terrific. Thank God for Chris Churchill.
Well, that might
never
be a
little boring
much.
When he's on. Nice to hear opinion that goes against the usual narrative heard on the roundtable, especially that an attorney who worked for a law firm that represented hedge funds is progressive, as Alan would say, don't you see? And that's from Aaron. Actually, I was just quoting.
Apollo Global Management, by the way, was the hedge fund that he represented.
I was just saying that he didn't technically work at a hedge fund.
I know. No, you're right. Calling him a hedge fund guy was not accurate, but he did.
A corporate lawyer
who had hedge funds mm-hmm. as clients.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to correct the record myself. It is not I who says, don't you see? It's me quoting Festus from Gunsmoke, who said, don't you see, all the time. And Richard says, John McCain was an inspiring, honorable, and brave patriot, and although he deserves it, I do feel a little sorry for President Trump being so shunned at the funeral. If it makes the president feel any better, I did not receive an invite either. And that's from Richard.
Well, it wasn't just John McCain not wanting President Trump at his funeral. Barbara Bush also specifically said that he couldn't come, right?
Right.
And he was told not to come to the royal wedding. He seems to be off a lot of
Does
lists.
Does some of that help the Trump brand a little bit,
yes.
though, do you think? I mean, his whole thing is being anti-establishment.
I think
the more that the Republican establishment shuns him, doesn't that kind of help him?
Well, I think with McCain it's different because he has such strong, well-deserved veteran support.
Mm-hmm. And what this president, so-called president, had to say, you know, about McCain not being a hero.
Right.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, for a guy who, you know, was playing golf for the entire length of the Vietnam
right.
War.
That was one of like three moments during the campaign where you gasped and you thought, wow.
Three?
Well, wow, that this is disqualifying.
Right.
You know, I thought what he said about McCain and then the Access Hollywood tapes and then fill in whatever you want on the third.
The Hillary and the NRA thing.
Or Russia, if you're listening. We could, this could be like a rap song.
We could come up with more than three, I'm sure.
Throwback Friday. Yeah.
And Lisa says, beginning of the end, Trump is sweating his fake tan off in fear of Woodward's forthcoming book, along with his dwindling poll numbers. Finally, hopefully, Americans are waking up to this classless, horrid person. Cheers and honor to Senator McCain, Lisa from Pequog. Well, you know, that's an interesting letter because there have been a lot of books about Trump already, and they come with a great symbol clash. And then you don't hear much about them again.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I forget the name of the author, the kind of the gossip writer who
Michael
wrote that.
Wolff.
Michael
Wolff.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
that book should not have gotten the attention that it got.
Right. Or
because,
Omarosa.
Yeah.
Well, but
Woodward
Wolff got out early. See, early is, and it was in his favor because at
that
point.
But it was also filled with just obvious inaccuracies, mm-hmm. and I think it undercut the whole.
Right.
Woodward's book will be a lot more, will be, you know, impeccable. Mm-hmm. I do agree with the writer. Maybe disagree with the writer that the idea that any book these days is going to, you know, bring down a president, I kind of doubt that. But
maybe the National Enquirer will. I think that's what he's got more to fear.
You might be right.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
And Carol Ann writes, dearest panel, how fitting. Trump sees the world in terms of winning and losing. What better way for Trump to dishonor Senator McCain than to reaffirm his, quote, winning in 2016? Thank you. And that's from Carol Ann. And then Brian says, not worthy. Why are we mourning the death of a war criminal? As usual, willingness to keep history in mind is lacking. There was never any legal justification for bombing civilians in Vietnam, and the senator was an enthusiastic participant in that outrage. That he was tortured by the Vietnamese no more expiates his crimes than the torture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who expiates his crimes on 9/11. His flippant bomb Iran shows he'd never change in his disrespect for human life, and that's from Brian. And Bobby says, PFOA Community Health Questionnaire. Judith, how should we view the differences between a report done by the New York State Department of Health and Bennington College in regards to the health impacts of PFOA contamination? The Bennington College PFOA Community Health Questionnaire indicates a lot more people were affected than the report from the NYSDOH, which is New York State Department of Health.
So again, I should disclose I was involved in the Bennington College health questionnaire, and I think there are real problems with the way the state health department approached this issue. The Bennington College report found some different findings involving cancer in the community, and I think it really shows that this needs a lot more attention, including the establishment of a health monitoring fund.
And it proves you can't believe a thing you read or see. I mean, look at the Puerto Rican statistics, which turn out to be
incredibly wrong.
Even the guys who put out the early ones are now recanting.
Well, the government, their official number until a few days ago was that there were roughly 65 deaths. Now, you talk to anyone in Puerto Rico, and they would say that's just not true. And so they, you know, this new estimate of close to 4,000 deaths, which is much more than Katrina, the worst natural disaster in the country. And I think both that situation and the state health department's failure on counting PFOA illnesses shows the importance of independent science and people kind of looking over the shoulder, you know, checking the math. And the great thing about the Bennington College study is it actually went out and talked to people in the community. And there's no reason why the state health department can't do the same thing. And they should do it in Newburgh, and they should do it in Petersburg.
All right. Let's go to the Palestinian refugee story, a Trump administration to end U.S. funding to U.N. program for Palestinian refugees. They've decided to cancel all U.S. funding of the United Nations aid program for Palestinian refugees. Part of its determination to put its money where its policy is as it seeks a recalculation of U.S. foreign aid spending and prepares its own Israeli-Palestinian peace plan. An announcement to be made within the next several weeks, the administration plans to voice its disapproval of the way the U.N. Relief and Works Agency spends the funds and to call for a sharp reduction in the number of Palestinians recognized as refugees, dropping it from more than 5 million, including descendants, to fewer than a tenth of that number, or those still alive from when the agency was created 7 decades ago, according to officials familiar with that decision.
I mean, the question is, are you, if it was your grandparents who were displaced, are you still a refugee? And I mean, that's part of what's going on here. I think another part is just kind of, there are a lot of people who are uncomfortable with what UNWA, is that how you would, I think is how people
say
it?
Yeah, UNWA.
There's reason to be a little bit discomforted about some of the ideology that they espouse, and there's some anti-Semitism. On the flip side, though, is the question over whether if you cut funds for schools and healthcare and all those sorts of things, do you make the situation worse? Do you increase the likelihood for violence?
Right.
And you know, terrorism and all, do you make the situation that much more dangerous if people get desperate?
And the humanitarian aspect of all this is a UN agency. I think the most startling part of this article in the Washington Post was the quote from Nikki Haley saying, "The Palestinians continue to bash America," as a justification for cutting the budget. And the U.S. provides about a third of this agency's budget. But I think this is, you know, a broader ideological shift in this administration. I mean, we're still waiting for Jared Kushner to solve the Middle East crisis. I don't know how that's working out for him, for us.
He may have to solve it from jail.
Yeah. Well, he'll have a lot of time. But I think, you know, I think they've got to really carefully examine refugee issues. And as Chris said, some unintended consequences here. I think this is a big mistake and will very likely come back to destabilize the region even more. A lot of this money goes to schools.
By the way, we've heard from David, who says, "The downside to pushing the impeachment angle when running for office is that it pulls Trump supporters out of the woodwork as they see it as a personal attack, which they will defend to a fault. It is harder for them to defend his policies." And that's from David.
It energizes the base is what it does. And that's the last thing you want to do if you're...
It may and it may not. I think that works the other way, which is that I know an awful lot of Democrats who are scratching their heads and saying they want him impeached.
Yeah, but they're going to vote anyways. Right.
No,
right?
Wait a second now, Chris. Let me, in all due respect, which I have tremendous amount for you, and that is it works both ways. Obviously, you don't want to energize the Republican base, but you do want to energize the Democratic base.
Yeah, but I think the assumption is, and maybe it's wrong, but the assumption is that the Democratic base is already energized, mm-hmm. and so the key is just to keep them that way. And also not energize the other base, right?
Well, in all due respect, once again, the one thing,
it's a blanket
with all due respect, Chris, yeah. I hate you.
Yeah. Not at all. We think he's great.
How does his knife feel? No, with all due respect,
no. But you know that is always a good technique to laugh, because then I forget what I was going to say.
Oh,
what's happened here? But it is to me, I think the I word will be tremendously effective in bringing people out, because I think there is no limit on how much the Democrats that I talk to just are so scared of this guy. They're so worried about him, and they want him out of here.
But I'll say that I'll be shocked if Delgado goes there, because every indication to me is that he's a candidate who plays it very safe.
But
he's not trying to make waves. He's a cautious candidate.
But the Democrats have for years been making mistakes. I don't want to go into it, because that would raise what the issues are. But they've been making mistakes, and in the name of playing it safe. Chuck Schumer is playing it safe right now. I don't think it's bringing him a lot of kudos, for not being an effective opponent of this, what some people consider this to be a criminal.
Well, I think the Democratic base, as Chris said, is already fairly energized. Yeah. I mean, people are going to vote on the Democratic side. And it's the impeachment issue. I mean, I look at it a little differently. It's kind of a moot point. If the Democrats take control, and if the Mueller report has important actionable information, there will be impeachment proceedings. So what does it really matter for candidates to say where they do or don't stand on impeachment? I mean, that is the process that our founding fathers established. That's a restaurant in Washington, to deal with situations like this. I mean, I'm kind of bored with the impeachment
debate. I mean, if you go there too early, too, it kind of undercuts what you say when the report finally does come out. If people think you were for impeachment no matter what the report says, then,
you have to, even with President Trump, you have to be fair and you have to follow the evidence.
Yes, and despite my immense respect for both of you, I think you're wrong. With all due respect. We heard from David, who is furious about the fact that we didn't rebuke the fellow who wrote about McCain. You remember the McCain letter and said that deserved a rebuke from the panel.
But yeah, it probably did. But, I mean, people are entitled to their opinion, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, calling McCain a war criminal, I think, is obviously he wasn't in charge of the policies. You know, his father was obviously high up in the military, but he wasn't in charge of the policies that ended up putting him in that prison camp. Yeah. You know, I mean, he was there for what, 5 years?
5 years. Yeah. You have to acknowledge that.
Right. I think, could have walked out at any time. Right. I mean, that's the important part, too.
There's a list of positives and there's a list of negatives. But, you know, he did serve his country and he's dead. So I kind of tend to respect that, at least for the day he's being buried.
It's certainly fair to look at his record in the Senate and question certain things. He is a mixed record for sure, and he was a bit of a hawk, but I don't think that makes him a war criminal.
Right. But, you know, people can get very passionate about these subjects. I'm not being defending that letter.
He was also a huge voice against torture and all sorts of other things.
I didn't like the letter, but I think our job is to read them and let people judge for themselves what needs to be answered here. I mean, that's what we've always done. And people are passionate right now, and I, based on the mail I'm getting, and I'll bet that you guys are getting, Chris, people are the energy level is up, you know, like from 2% to 10% now.
It's all the way up to 11, so maybe to speak.
10, 11%, right.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody for being here and for your letters as well. Chris, good to see you.
You too.
Excellent. Just a quick programming note. Alan and I wanted to make mention of this. We believe we're going to be running the hearings next week, unless Congress changes its mind over the next, 24 hours or so. The Brett Kavanaugh hearings for the Supreme Court of the United States will be starting on Tuesday morning. We're out on Monday because of the holiday. They would start Tuesday, and most of the programming on WAMC throughout the day would be preempted because we're going to run the hearings in their entirety. So just a programming note on that, that we will be providing those to you. And obviously during all of the breaks, we'll have our normal WAMC programming and news and the great stuff that they always produce. So with that note, have a great weekend, and we'll be back right after this.